Good evening once again, and greetings in Christ's name. Thank you, Leroy, for what you shared there. Something a week of meetings, how you, the week progresses, you physically get tired. Your brethren work all day and then going away every night. Hopefully, inwardly, we're being refreshed, renewed. This evening, I'd like to continue on kind of what we started in last night on the home. I'd like to just begin by reading again some scriptures and maybe start in 1 Peter 3. We read part of it last night. We'd like to just read another verse there on the brethren side. We read there about the sisters, wives submitting themselves, being in subjection. Okay, 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Okay, now the notice that he mentioned it last night there, but the wives, it says likewise. So it's talking about, it's a continuation of something that he had stated before. And it was giving the Christ as our example, one who submitted himself to the Father's will there. And then he says, likewise, ye wives. Then it goes down, likewise, ye husbands. The same Spirit dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife, as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life. And then he gives a qualifier there, it's that your prayers be not hindered. Okay, let's go to Colossians 3, verse 18. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. And then we go to Ephesians 5, going through this rather quickly. Beginning at verse 22 to the end. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, and of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverences her husband. Now tonight, it's my burden that for the home, because as I said last night, to me the home is the, I think we all understand, the home is the foundation of the church. The church can rise no higher than those homes that are within it. My wife and I have been married 33 years, and I certainly don't hold our marriage as the model. And yet I have been very blessed in living with the woman that God has granted to me. And it's my desire that my children could also experience a blessed married life. It's kind of scary sometimes when I realize that my children are looking to me as the role model with which to conduct their homes. Looking at the way I relate to my wife, the way my wife relates to me. As I said, we're definitely not perfect. There's times that I've had to apologize to my wife, times that I've hurt her deeply, and yet, in spite of that, she's been very gracious and forgiving. Tonight, as I shared last night, I think as well, that the two basic needs in marriage, and you notice in the scriptures that we read and some of the scriptures we read last night, that the wife is to submit to her husband. And the basic need that the husband desires in marriage is that respect that the wife gives to him when she submits to him. That she is content and comfortable in his leadership and his protection that ministers to a man like nothing else. And as I said last night, that a lot of men that had married for beauty and found out that that which was beautiful ended up turning out to be something that they could not live with, and you see them marrying someone else then that was less attractive. Because, and a lot of times they say, especially in factory work or whatever, where men and women are working side by side, in individuals that are experiencing trouble in their marriages, that they're unknowingly attracted to someone in the workplace that is actually meeting that need. They're not drawn to them physically. They're drawn to them because some woman is showing him a respect that he craves and is lacking in his own marriage. And then the requirement of the husbands is that they love their wives. The wife wants that security of knowing that she is the only one. She's that special person in his life. There's no competition there. And there's a wide range of application that a person could make in these two things. And so we're just going to be scratching the surface tonight and going to be really not... It could be something that could be several evenings shared on it. I appreciate what Brother Daniel shared with me last night after the message, but as you look in history, probably we're living in a rare era where women's lib and where women are in such leadership positions. I'd say probably if you would analyze history, it would be a very short segment that women have actually held positions that they do in our society today. And yet some of those things there that, and it, I think the time that the New Testament era was written, the women were mere possessions. They were at that low point that they could be disposed of, used, whatever. Like I said, it was just kind of like a thing, possession. But whether it's in our society today, you see women in because of their women's lib, putting them into places where God never intended them to be, and they're facing some very terrible things. Putting them in workforces, they're subject to all types of harassment. And so the beautiful thing here in Scripture is where God had intended for the women to be. Now, the word subject, submission, is a military term, and it just simply means to rank under. Now, I think we all understand that. Military, you have very structured, very orderly, And it's the only way they can function, is they must have order. And so the idea there, they all understand their rankings. And if you meet one that's superior to him, you automatically are under him. That's just an understood thing. And so it's what God is instructing the sisters, and God has ordained order in the home. And it's not a thing that the sister is in an inferior being, but it's just simply the way God structured it in order for it to function smoothly. He had a design for it. And yet you see Satan corrupting that and telling, you know, you have that those images of the sister that's a housewife. And sometimes we're kind of apologetic because we have so many career women today, and, you know, somebody asked you, what do you do? And, well, I'm just a housewife. Sisters, don't ever be ashamed of your role as a mother, as a keeper at home. That's God's highest calling for you. And the confusion in homes today, because women have stepped out of their role, and the contention there now, who's the head of the home and who's calling shots, and it's wrecking havoc. Something that was interesting, I read in a, and this was a purely a secular magazine. I was in a doctor's office and I picked up a magazine and was reading. I don't remember what they were trying to accomplish in the survey that they had taken in this particular magazine, so it was not from a religious standpoint at all. But they had taken a survey among individuals that were in a perverted lifestyle, homosexuals. And it mentioned two things that were a common background. It was like 80% of those that were involved in a perverted lifestyle. One was that they came from a religious background. I thought that was interesting. 80% of them had a religious background. And the second thing was they had a domineering mother. Now, I have not tried to analyze that, what it is that a home that has a domineering mother, why do the children become involved in all kinds of perversion, other than I think possibly just simply the curse that we bring on our homes when a mother is out of her God-given role. Now, I'd like to just notice the difference between, it doesn't say, mention obedience, it mentions submission. Now, it's something that I share a lot in weekend meetings on spiritual authority, and I had shared it with some of your youth here in Bible school last year. But it mentions specifically to submit to the husband, or to be in a role of submission. First of all, obedience is related to conduct, and it's relative, or it means that it can vary in relation to human authority. Submission is related to heart attitudes, and it is absolute, or that means it never varies regardless of circumstances, regardless of the spiritual condition of your husband, regardless of what he asked of you. Submission never varies. Obedience is relative. Okay, now, and that just simply is because sometimes you find women are in a role where the husband leaves the faith, or maybe they're in their marriage, and the sister becomes converted, and the husband doesn't. And that's that possibility that the husband would require something of his wife that violates God's higher law, and she cannot obey it because it'd be a violation of God's higher law. But her attitude is always one of being submissive. Okay, obedience is, like I said, it's related to conduct. Now let me just use another illustration. Okay, your husband asked you, dear, I think your covering needs to be a little bit larger. And you maybe discuss it. Okay, obedience, you go ahead and make your covering larger. But he's very sensitive to the attitude that you're displaying now. He senses that you're upset about it. You may be irked about it, maybe pouting a little bit about it. Okay, but you had obeyed him. The covering size was larger, so outwardly you conformed. But inwardly, you weren't submitting. Am I coming through on that, sisters? It's that possibility that you could outwardly obey, but it's not from a heart that's truly submitted. Now, the Christian life, and I call it the highway to holiness, is just like any road we travel. There's always two ditches. There's two different ways, and women can possibly get the wrong concept of submission. Now, this here I have actually gleaned from a sister's devotional booklet, Sister to Sister. I don't know if you have, any of you ladies have that. I like to snoop in my wife's devotional booklets. But it mentions the three different things. Okay, you have submission, you have subversion, and you have subservient. Okay, now submission is what God is asking of you sisters. But I'd like to look first of all at being subversive. And that is a systematic attempt to overthrow or undermine. It's possible tonight that you sisters can wear a nice, sizable covering. And that covering is your witness to the world that you're in God's order, that you've accepted God's headship order for you, and that you're in your place, you're satisfied in that. And that's a testimony to the world. And yet it's possible in your relating to your husband in a subversive type response. And sisters, I've seen it a number of times where a wife has a way of subtly working against her husband. The husband is trying to lead the home, wanting to set a pattern for the home, a direction for the home, and the wife physically is not able to, she's not able to contend with her husband physically. And I mentioned last night one way that a woman tries to control a man, but tonight talking about a different way of subtly undermining his leadership. Grudgingly doing something, pouting, won't talk, sleep on the couch, that type of thing. You know, depending on the issue even, and the stage of your family, that she might even pour out her heart to the children and maybe get the teenage children to side with her against the husband. And somehow we can kind of confuse it with submission. Yeah, I'm doing it, but I'm doing it grudgingly, you know, dragging my feet, that type of thing. Now, a number of years ago in the Auburn, Kentucky area, there was a farmer that raised some high-powered bulls, and he wanted to break them to lead with a halter. And I thought it was very interesting how the method that they used to break these big, powerful bulls. And what they do is they put a long rope, put a halter on the bull, and then put a long rope and then tie it to a donkey. Well, physically, there was no match. The bull was, I'm not sure what the weights were of the bull, but yet a donkey basically is probably a third or fourth of what a bull is. And yet you have two different natures there. They say the first while, the bull will just decide he's going to go someplace, and that's where he's going to go. But that little donkey's back there, look like a little four-bottom chisel pile. He's just bracing all feet and just dragging, and the bull just with his sheer brute strength can just drag the donkey wherever he wants. But that bull is contending with something there, contending with a nature there that's not going to give up. And they say in time, the donkey is leading the bull around. The bull doesn't have that fight in him like the donkey does. And so the donkey's just continually resisting. Finally, the bull just wears out. And to the point, he's just doesn't have no more fight in him. And so that little donkey's leading him around. And so that's how they train him. I thought it'd be very interesting to see that one time. For a man, physically, there's no match for a sister to contend physically. And yet, if there's that stubborn spirit, and you've seen it in homes as well, where a wife just continues to drag and drag and drag until finally the man just gives up. For a man, when I go home, that's a place of refuge. When I'm out in the world dealing with society, sometimes you feel beat up, and I have one place I look forward to going, that's home, because that's a haven, that's a place of refuge to see my wife, my children. But if I'm always having to go home to a place of contention, a place of strife, you know, there's no other place to go. And so pretty soon a man is willing to do whatever it takes. So there's a place that you can go and there's peace. And so it's eventually the man will just wear down and whatever for peace's sake. You see him just meekly following behind. The other is subservient. And probably most times we err on that side. And that is the idea that implies a cringing manner of one very conscious of a subordinate position. And, you know, that's kind of what the world views a wife who's submitted, that, yeah, you're just the doormat. You know, the husband's going to clean the shoes off on you. You're just there. Whatever he tells you to do, you just... Now, husbands, I'm assuming here tonight that you seek counsel from your wives in to me, serious, important matters, that you are very interested in what your wives have to say and give counsel. Now, I know there's a lot of times when I've asked my wife, what does she think about something? Well, she says, well, I don't know anything about that. But yet I've come to understand, even though they don't know the particulars of business, they don't know anything about tractors, they don't know anything about laying bricks, maybe buying vehicles or construction, whatever your particulars are there. And yet I've learned that I do myself a big favor if I take the counsel of my wife into consideration. My wife is very sensitive to some things. She's very sensitive to debt. She's very sensitive to the stress that debt puts on me. She sees when I get irritable, when ends don't meet. She's very sensitive to an empty checkbook. So she has some input there. She's interested in that. And I think God gives our sisters an intuition that I think we do well to heed. And a lot of times I said, well, you know, my wife, she said, well, I don't feel good about it. And sometimes I tend to get frustrated. Well, why don't you feel good about it? Because I want her to give me details, you know. Surely you got to have some reason. You just don't. And yet I've learned the hard way, because I just simply was. She couldn't explain it, so it must be that's just there's nothing to it. And I just went and plowed straight ahead to my own hurt. And yet I believe that the flip side, if we're humble enough as leaders to listen to our wives, and even though they can't necessarily explain the particulars, that we should take it as at least a caution, maybe put it on back simmer, whatever we're wanting to do, put it on back burner. But my wife, what she struggles with, and finally until we could work it out, she said, well, I don't want to say how I really feel. Because she said, I don't want to influence you. And I look at her and I said, well, I want to know what you think about this particular thing. I mean, her idea was that, well, you're the leader, you make the decision, and I'll meekly follow, you know, that type of thing. But that's subservient. But I believe God designed for the woman in being in a truly submitted attitude and spirit is that when your husband asks you counsel, that you clearly share your heart on a given issue, and then you just simply, but whatever you decide, I'll support you. I mean, that to me is a spirit. But when you come across and, hey, I really think you're making a big mistake, and you see your husband just going ahead with it, and then when you start to chafe at that, then that's where you're not really submitted. And again, it's a thing of the sovereignty of God plays in that, because you just simply see that God is using your husband. And though your husband is maybe making a wrong choice, you just simply commit him to God. There was one time in particular, I remember I asked my wife, we were wanting to sell our place and we were wanting to move to another location in the community. And I was just saying, you know, I was just trying to figure out what we should ask for the place. And so we talked about some figures and I told her what I was thinking. She said, well, I think you ought to make it $5,000 higher. And I said, man, we won't be able to sell it for that. So I stubbornly went my way. $5,000, that's not a real big amount, but it was kind of a good lesson for me. So we sold it for what I had said that we were going to sell it for, and we bought the other house. But we ended up having to do some remodeling. And it was interesting, but what it cost us to remodel it was $5,000. You know, I think God was, if I would just been more sensitive to my wife, could have saved myself something there. And yet, the spirit with which you respond to your husband in a submitted, truly godly spirit, it ministers to your husband. It's his heart will never leave you when he senses that ministers to a man like nothing else. And I think it's what Titus is talking about there, where it says the aged women teach the younger women how to love their husbands. And I always thought that was kind of interesting, because now, you know, to teach a young lady to love a young man, well, that's just like falling off the bench. You know, that just comes natural. But yet I believe it's something that is beyond just that initial call it fireworks, whatever. Okay, but that you truly show your daughters and demonstrating them to them how to love their future husbands. Okay, I see our time is moving on. And then we have the husbands, love your wives. And again, like I said, this setting was written in a time when men were very cruel, wives were very poorly treated. And so out of that, the gospel was shared, and now these men are writing to these new Christians how to respond. And he sets the highest possible standard that there can be, that you love your wives as Christ loved the church, unconditionally, sacrificially. I mean, that's, to me, if a woman would understand that, they would come flocking into the church if they would understand that concept. But they're out there in the world and think they're seeking after love. And yet in reality, most times it's just lust. But here the church is establishing something there. It was something beautiful for the women, that the husband love her as Christ loved the church. Now I remember a man introducing his wife, and he made this comment. He said, "This is the gracious lady in whose eyes I looked into 30 years ago and have never lost the spell of it." I was blessed by that, because I believe that's what the woman desires from us, is that security. 1 Peter 3 there, it says, "Dwell with her according to knowledge, as being giving honor unto the weaker vessel." And like I said, they're equal spiritually. In fact, I think most women probably are superior spiritually, emotionally, physically, weaker, brought to tears easily, hurt deeper, but their makeup is different than a man's. The idea there, what Peter says, dwell with her according to your understanding of her. And it takes seeking to know and an inquiry. That's what the idea there is, to seeking to know, an inquiry, an investigation. And probably some of the mistakes us men make. Well, let me read Deuteronomy 24:5, an Old Testament scripture there. But I share it with the young men as I counsel them before marriage, because I think there's something here. "When a man hath taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year, and shall cheer up his wife which he hath taken." Now understand, individuals that counsel couples that are having marriage problems, they say a lot of the marriage problems go back to that first year. But one of the mistakes, or maybe a couple mistakes here, is that starting up can be very hectic. Here you have this little bride now, and it's that macho image in us, that image in us that we want to be the provider, the protector. I don't want my new little bride to have to live in some little dumpy trailer. I want to be able to show everybody that I can provide for this sweet little thing. And so I just tear into business now. I got her, you know, we got that behind us. And so I tear into business, and because I got to make money, because I want something nice for this little bride. And, you know, it's in that first year probably is some foundations are laid there that are faulty and start to show up later then. The second mistake is we quit courting our companions. And I think it's the idea there that we continue with the same intensity that we went at it when we were courting them to try to win their love. The idea there, we were very interested in what interest she had and what her likes and dislikes and the effort there that we put forth there to just never miss a lick. You know, every chance we had, you know, we were right there to see her. Same courtesy, the same thoughtfulness. You know, some of those things I found myself having to come back to that point, you know, that I realized that, yeah, my wife likes nice things, but the bottom line is she's not interested in a ivory palace. You listen to the country songs, And they're talking about having everything so nice, but the love is not there. You know, so a woman, yeah, you might have exceptions to the rule. But that's most times what a woman is not interested in having everything just so perfect. It takes time to get to know them, to their spiritual needs. And yet when she sees that her husband is sensitive to that, patiently taking time with her to try to understand her, she senses that there's nothing more important, that she's the most important thing in his eyes. You know, it's then that she's able to share her heart. But usually there's just one problem. Seems like there's always other things pressing in. We're not very sensitive. We're rarely patient. You know, my wife, the time, at least earlier on when we were in the midst of little children and hectic schedules, her time to talk was 10 o'clock. And that was an hour past time for to go to sleep. You know, I mean, that was her time to kind of start throttling down. We had lots of children. And so that was her time then, that, you know, just a quiet time and to talk. And there we'd be talking. And she'd always would accuse me, and all of a sudden she'd hear this. You know, there I was falling asleep, you know. Well, she's forgiven me a long time ago, and I think she's given up on me, actually. And yet those are some of the areas that I failed in my wife. You know, there's just some things, and sisters, it's kind of awkward for me to share with your husbands there what you really desire. So I'm kind of going by what my wife tells me. You know, there's just some things we just simply probably will never understand the other side there entirely. We just simply learn to love them. I still to this day don't understand why a woman's eyes sparkle when you mention something about going shopping. You know, my wife talking about thrift stores, and I appreciate that she's wanting to save money. And I've learned that I can endure one day of thrift shopping with her if it really makes her happy. You know, I can go into a thrift store and I can walk up and down the aisles in about 5 minutes. I can kind of assess that there's really nothing in there. And I hear my wife, skeet, 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 skeet. She's got to touch every coat hanger in there, move them all, and she has to handle everything and to make sure that she's not overlooking anything. Why a woman has to move the furniture every 6 months, just wants that thing rearranged, you know, and that stuff weighs. And yet, you know, I've come to understand this is her domain, this is what she wants, and I try to work in that. I like what one man said, their concept of saving is so totally different than a man's. He said his concept of saving is he scrounges and scrapes together $100 and tucks it into savings. He said his wife will come home the next week and she said, "Honey, I saved $100 today." He said, "You remember that coat that was they wanted for $200?" He said it was 50% off and it was just $100, so I took that out of savings and I bought that coat. You know, her concept of saving was getting something on 50%, where his was putting it in the bank, you know. And so some of those ideas there, I think you all know what I'm talking about. But the security of your leadership, and we were talking about the wives submitting, but I think probably one of the things that gives a woman the most security is that she sees her husband broken and humble before God. That he is an individual in authority, under authority, excuse me. That he recognizes his God-given role in relating to the church. Because you take a husband that resists authority will be a very domineering, very abusive type individual in the home. It's just the way it works. You're not fit to lead if you haven't learned to follow. And that's a motto that I'm holding out to my son as he's considering courtship. Because I know that if he doesn't learn and come to rest with authority, when he establishes the home of his own, then the potential there to be a very domineering individual and very abusive to a wife, that potential rests in any man that is not broken before God. We take the responsibility, the leadership in for the spiritual condition of our families. It's not saying that we have all the insight. I value my wife's insight in our children's affairs. And yet I'm responsible. The buck stops here. And yet the tendency of man is to try to put some of that load over on the woman's side. But when she sees that you've clearly taken my responsibilities, and that, like I said, the buck stops here. Family altar, that she's not continually taking the Bible out there and cutting and putting it there in front of you to kind of remind you that we need to have devotions, but that she sees that you clearly take that responsibility, you delight in that, you see the need of that, and that gives them security. You know, there's a lot of things that we as men can just be very, very insensitive. Like I said, over the years, I've tried to learn what's upsetting to my wife. And as I said, home, the house is her domain. And there's just times when we can be kind of insensitive. You know, they've worked hard to provide a delicious meal. They've worked hard to keep the house tidy. And I appreciate that. My wife, I come home to it looks lived in. I don't like this spick and span house. I like a house that's lived in, but yet it's orderly, it's functioning, and yet there's just times when I forget myself and I come in and I got muddy boots, and she'll remind me that, you know, get the boots out, you know. She has a nice way of doing it. Sometimes we come to the table, and we got to be realistic about it. It's not like it was in courtship when you were smelled like you just dumped a bottle of cologne all over yourself when you go to meet her there. You come home from a day's work, you're sweaty, you're dirty, and that's, we understand that, but I'm talking about like when we come to the table and you smell like the barn. I remember one lady. Her husband worked out in the pig barn, raised pigs there, and spent all his time out there. And when he came to the table, he smelled like pigs. And one time, the salesman came to the door, wanting to see her husband. She said, "No, he's out in the pig barn." Then she thought about it and said, "He's the one with the hat on." She wasn't sure if he'd recognize him among the pigs there. But those are some of the things that I think, again, we do well to be sensitive to our wives. To me, that's just one of those things where we, in those little areas, and like I said, there's just, we can go on a whole host of things, but yet it's just some of those things that you're really demonstrating that you really care about her, you really love her. You see those things are. And the one thing that I guess especially that is troubling to me, when a man can take a hobby and be gone for a week, weekend, hunting. I'm not saying that there's no room for that at all, but I guess I would be very, very slow in that. Hobbies, hunting, volunteers for firemen, EMTs that take you away from home frequently and for prolonged periods of time. To me, I guess I question if there's something wrong in the home. To me, when the day's work is done, if a man truly loves his wife and his home, he's got one direction he's headed, and that's home. And I realize there's times when duty calls us away, but I'm talking about frequently, those type of thing. In closing here, President Bush wasn't W, it was his daddy, first president, made this comment after a long and distinguished career in politics, which included director of CIA, vice president, president. After his career was over, he made this statement. He said, "I still hold my most important titles, husband, father, grandfather." And really, you know, that is, there's a man that was at the top of the ladder in society and in politics, and those are the things that drive men. And yet, I was blessed by that he recognized his most important titles were father, husband, father, grandfather. See, our time is here to close. May God bless you as you continue to work together in your homes. And like I said, I believe our highest calling is to just simply that we're role models and demonstrating to the next generation so they can enjoy a good, solid, blessed marriage. We don't think much about it because we don't know anything different. And yet, how many homes out there, they talk about hell in terms of their home life. So we do have a tremendous responsibility in passing on that to our children, children's children. Shall we stand for closing prayer?